Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of consciousness and where we're going as a civilization and a collective race of human beings as we return to the very foundation of our essential nature. And that is an aspect of the divine feminine, the divine masculine, the merging of our divine nature, but we've really forgotten about this aspect of the divine feminine in the last 2,000 years. And now there's a return to this way of understanding. And speaking about this tonight are two of my favorite guests. They are practically family. They are real experts, real scientists, researchers, mystics, linguists, doctors, JJ and Desiree Hertog. They are the authors also of the Pistis Sophia, which is a great tribute to the Sophia wisdom that comes out of the Coptic tradition. And we'll be talking about many of these different traditions of the feminine, because I can't think of a better subject to talk about in order to integrate our psyches back to our true nature. They also have a book coming out, which is called, what is it called, Dr. Hertog?
The 72 Names of the Divine
Feminine.
Mother.
The 72 Names of the Divine Mother will be published this coming spring. So look for that. Future Science?
Correct.
Future Science. Very exciting addition to the wisdom that both of these great researchers and mystics and scholars have put together.
I might add, subtitle, the among the myriad names of the divine feminine.
Among the myriad names of the divine feminine.
Because we cannot circumscribe the divine mother by simply 72 names, since there are tens of thousands in the traditions of the East and West.
Well, let's start with this whole concept of the divine feminine. I mean, it's not really a concept, except, you know, the male tradition likes to make everything into a concept. Let's start with the divine feminine herself, Desiree.
Thank you.
What did we lose? Where did we go wrong? What happened? And what do we need to get back on track?
Well, what's interesting is I take from the Coptic literature, and actually I'm going to switch this a little bit around. They considered one of the greatest aspects of the divine the Sophia, or wisdom.
The divine feminine wisdom.
Yeah.
Sophia means wisdom.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so the idea in all this is that there's different levels of wisdom. Mm-hmm. And people mostly on this planet are going out for what they would call the lesser Sophia, the lesser wisdom. And but the,
are they going for any wisdom at all?
Well, that's at least the lesser Sophia. And, okay. You know, they want to know the basics and the practicality. And yet, in a certain sense, that really what the Coptics were searching for was the higher Sophia, the one that really could raise our consciousness, get us a better planet, also even get us into the oneness of the universe. And I think that's really what it's all about. And even if you go back to the story of Genesis with Adam and Eve, Eve kind of, before they were in light bodies, and then they became in bodies of flesh. So what happened is that greater wisdom that they once had then became concretized down here on planet Earth.
So what we're saying is there is the all-embracive concept of the divine feminine, the divine mother, basically.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That one finds in all major traditions. Mm-hmm. And then there is the, what we call the lesser Sophia, that which is put into a corporal or physical form, that is seen as the feminine embodiment of wisdom.
You mean like Mary Magdalene,
correct.
Isis.
Or Durga, or Lakshmi, all of these.
The white buffalo calf woman is one of them.
No, that's one of the names we're going to be having.
Note that in the North American tradition,
that
this is a symbol that's connected with interspecies communication.
Yes.
The white buffalo. The symbol also is that of the dove we find in the Peruvian traditions, even in the peoples of the Near East, the sacred birds, the Hittites, in the Hebrew, Yonah or Jonah is also connected with the symbol of the dove of peace.
But can we just back up a second, Desiree?
Well, I want to talk about the white buffalo.
Okay, but I wanted to talk about, before we get to any of that, what is it that we're talking about? I mean, we're naming things and archetypes, but what is the essence of the feminine?
Well, let me just say, I mean, it is, we always treat the woman like she's, you know, the lesser, literally, right. Let me put it this way. But let's take a look at the white buffalo calf woman, which in the Lakota Sioux, I'm not even going to get into the pronunciation of the name, but she came to earth really and taught the people seven sacred rites. And this is important. So what does the woman do? Really, she gives that higher initiation for people. And that's one aspect of what she does. And those seven sacred rites, one was the sacred pipe. We all kind of know about that. Another was the sweat lodge, which is a, really a sacred place of initiation. In a sense, you could look at this as being maybe a way of even giving birth to or rebirth. The third would be the vision quest. And this is very, very profound, because if we're going to know ourselves, we have to go through this vision quest. I think this is the birth and the rebirth, and I think that's the essence. I want to continue.
Yeah.
There's also the sun dance. So, you know, you always think the sun dance would have been given by a guy, but actually it was supposedly one of these seven Lakota rites that was given by the white buffalo calf woman. And then there's the making of relatives, or well, really the family, the keeping of the soul, and they're preparing a girl for womanhood. So these are other aspects of the renewal and the growing of life.
Would you say these are archetypal elements that the feminine gives? Like, I'm sure there's the Kuan Yin aspect, the Tara traditions of Tibet. Do they all give these elements to civilization, that feminine aspect?
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely. And I do want to phrase this to a higher perspective, because in the traditional Bible, the Tanakh, we find even in the book of Proverbs, chapter 8, these words, God himself produced me from the beginning of his way, the earliest of his achievements of long ago. This is Proverbs chapter 20, chapter 8, verse 22. And then verse 30, then I came to be beside him as a master worker. I came to be the one he was especially fond of day by day. There's a concept of coevolution here of the divine feminine, which the rabbinical scholars, the mystics, recognized thousands of years ago. But the motif of the mother's co-creator comes to be subsumed under a theology, in particularly the Western traditions, that somehow disassociates itself from the names of the divine mother, whereas in the Eastern tradition, she is there at the beginning. So we might think of this conversation we have tonight as a back to the future, back to the beginning in the heavens, where the divine feminine represents source, represents the matrix out of which all creative conceptuality proceeds. Even language is thought of as a tool of the divine feminine.
Well, good. I'm glad you got to that, the source, matter, mutter, you know, mare, the sea, you know, the source of all life itself is the elements of the divine feminine, and that's actually what we've forgotten.
So the next observation is, what is the distinction between the greater Sophia, greater wisdom, and the lesser Sophia, that which has corporal identity? And I've written about this in our new book. The greater Sophia represents consciousness, which is involved in the measurement of all basic processes and procedures of life. In other words, the beginning and the end, and the new beginning and the end, the new Genesis is the divine feminine. Also, the greater Sophia is the consciousness of creativity, which affects the micro as well as the macro phenomena of the universe. And so we're talking about something that is not confined simply to Mother Earth, but is there in the embodiment of the heavens, such as we find in the Egyptian symbol of Nut, of the heavens.
It must be, but the question then, it seems like the divine feminine is everything. What is the masculine? You know, where do we have there on the other side of that?
Yeah, let me say, though, coming from the feminine aspect here, that I honestly believe that when you really, really reach the higher levels that we're talking about, there really isn't the duality of masculine and feminine. But to be able to speak about it, you know, some of the languages on our planet, like Hungarian, mm-hmm. doesn't quite have the male and female as defined as we do. And of course, other languages have it even more defined, where every word is either masculine or feminine. So I just want to say that there's different varieties of this, but I believe that the masculine element is really that administrative order of life, and the feminine then is the creative. And I think it's interesting that at the cross of Jesus, and we're getting close to Christmas, so we're always mm-hmm. thinking about his life when he was on the planet, there were
four mothers of the cross who were there at the base of the cross.
Who was the form? Mary the mother.
Mary Magdalene. And Johanna, or she was also known by other names. Who's also the relative of Jesus, known as Johanna.
Well, and the whole idea is that the feminine was needed for that element of literally transformation. And we think that the whole thing of even Mary being at the tomb, I mean, it's not that she was required at that point, but it's showing you that at the points of change, at mm-hmm. the points of transformation, recreation, rebirth, the feminine aspect was even there in the message of Jesus.
This is why we retranslated Pistis Sophia, which means faith and wisdom, which is, in essence, five volumes of the lost teaching of Jesus, where mm. Jesus returns in a body of light to talk to his disciples after the physical, historical death and resurrection scenario.
Well, let's go into that a little bit, because the Pistis Sophia was a section of the New Testament that was thrown out when it was codified.
No, it never made it to that level of...
No, was it
enough? Ecclesiastical discussion. So the Pistis Sophia was a text written, according to some scholars, like Otto von Harnack, the great German Protestant scholar, in the late 2nd century. Some scholars think it was the 3rd century, but it has components mm-hmm. of the Logoi, or the lost sayings of Jesus, of both the 2nd and the 3rd century mm-hmm. A.D. Mm-hmm. So it's relatively after the New Testament period comes to an end that we have this wonderful text written originally in the Coptic, later in the Greek, and then it goes into some other languages, but for all intents and purposes, it goes underground because it speaks of the female disciples that Jesus had. It speaks of the female principle, also known as the Virgin of Light, mm-hmm. and it speaks of Sophia as a model of human evolution. In other words, the suffering of Sophia, her petitions for cosmic release, liberation, all exemplify the male aspect that is feminine as well as the female aspect that is feminine. It has been lost, that must be found.
Do you think it's allegory, the original, or is it an actual dialogue that maybe Jesus had with his disciples?
Well, really, it supposedly is written even after, we were talking about the transfiguration, when he went into the heavens and he's coming back to talk about it. And then they take the Psalms, and they also take many things that Jesus said and put it together. And in a certain sense, I believe that these things actually can happen or could have happened, that Jesus did come back. We know that from
it's actually a historic narrative of Jesus' expressions seen within the larger context of sociology, theology, and cosmology.
Wait, so you think it's not allegory? You're saying you think it's a possible actual dialogue? And of course, uses allegory in it, perhaps.
Right.
But in that, Jesus is supposed to have freed this entrapped soul of the Sophia, the feminine.
Well, and the whole idea, anyway, is that there's the lesser Sophia and then the higher Sophia, and the higher Sophia understands that she actually came to this planet to help humanity, and with Jesus, she helps humanity. I just want to say, though, a little bit about the book,
Pistis
Sophia, that Mary Magdalene actually is mentioned 83 times in it, which is an amazing thing, because most people don't realize that. Martha, who we remember with Lazarus, one of his sisters, was mentioned 6 times, and Salome was mentioned 4 times. If we go back to the cross, each gospel, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, have different women at the cross, but Mary Magdalene is across the board, mm-hmm. amazingly. Mary, the mother of Jesus, was also there, and John, Mary, the mother of James and Joseph. Mary was the most common name.
I guess it was.
It was like we would call,
John.
Linda or John, And also Salome.
Who's Salome?
Well, she was one of the disciples, too, and supposedly in the Gospel of Mark, she was present as well.
Wasn't she connected to John the Baptist?
Well, some people say that, yeah. There's other, well, I think some of these names are, but, it's difficult to know exactly.
But let's, I mean, that's all names. Let's get back to the message of the book. Pista Sophia means wise faith.
No, faith and wisdom.
Faith and wisdom. So what is the what is the goddess energy of this book that you've beautifully translated, both of you?
What's very interesting is, of course, Jesus is talking most of the time, a lot of the time, to Mary Magdalene, and she comes across as this very, very advanced soul who starts to also understand all the aspects of his life. And I think that that's, and that's what comes out, and also understanding what happens to the soul after it passes from this planet and things like that. So it's really just an advanced teaching.
But what is the purpose of this teaching, Pista Sophia?
The teaching is to awaken within us the feminine as a co-participant in the story of creation. To put it in simple language, it's to elevate the human soul into recognition that there are two wings to the human, the male and the female, that the soul cannot be fully self-realized and thus finds its female form in the process of ascension.
Of course, you can't fly with only one wing.
Correct.
So what can we learn today from this aspect of the feminine? How do we use that? I mean, it's great to read these, you know, stories, allegories, to repeat the names, but I want to have something I can use.
Well, I think it's important to realize we're all going through a new phase. I know you've been talking about that. Many people think we're at the end of the world.
No, I don't. I think we're at the beginning.
Exactly. That's
the end of the beginning.
So after the Omega point comes the new Alpha.
Yes.
And so, like Jesus at the cross, we all have to, the feminine aspect is coming back at this time, and we'll call it also the Shekinah or the Ruach HaKodesh is coming back to give us the power of renewal.
You think we've already been crucified and we're waiting for a rebirth?
In a certain sense, that's a good way of saying
it.
Do
you think so? Yeah. I think we've been nailed to the cross.
Well, that's what Dr. Ritek says. You know, we're all carrying our cross of space and time.
Physical incarnation is into the physical body, which is shaped like a cross. We are our consciousness is crucified to our body in terms of the physical birth process, from which point on we go into a body of entropy or death day by day.
Or life.
Until we have self-realization, we realize that we conquered the linear concept of death and time, space, confinement.
So what changes that death into life? Mm-hmm. Okay, it's love, it's renewal, which is the feminine
aspects. The crucifixion of the cross, that's the allegory of the meaning of the women at the cross, is that what changes this, dead consciousness back into life and rebirth is the return to the feminine. That's what you're saying.
Johanna sometimes is interchanged with another Mary, the three Marys, distant relative of Jesus. So put it to the audience, there's the convergence of the human self with the higher self, which the ancients saw as the divine feminine. This over-self is the expression of an integrated human that is able to work on many levels of creativity, co-participate with the divine, and realize God is not an abstract, but God as a loving father-mother unity, or father-mother-God. This is clearly there in the symbols that are sacred to the peoples of the ancient Near East, and exemplified throughout our scriptures. If we read them with a hypertext of looking behind the metaphors and the poetic language, there is the breath of divine feminine. There is the breath of divine connected with spirit. There in the New Testament book of 1 Corinthians chapter 12, we have a reference even to the language of wisdom, the Logos Sophia, as opposed to the language of gnosis, the language of knowledge. So this higher wisdom is something that is not to be taken lightly, not to be laughed at, not to be played with, is the corporality of the feminine as the female form, but is seen here as the universal aspect of the divine, which is the inner aspect of creativity.
I think you also make a good point that different aspects of the feminine
have, in a sense, different archetypal energies connected to it. The Kuan Yin is different than the white buffalo calf woman. That's different than Isis. That's different than Tara. But before we go there, I just wanted to put that out, that that's sort of what your book also highlights, is the different frequencies and qualities of name. But would you say, if we're looking at it from the big picture, that the corporations, the corporate greed, is this male energy that sort of will be or has been nailed to the cross in a kind of downward spiral of destruction, and it's only by returning to the indigenous wisdom of the people of the earth that this old mentality can be resurrected?
Well, yes, I think that's why we want to use this as a teacher. Because if we truly look behind the scenes to the myth behind the myth and the science behind the ancient science, we will see that there's the spark of the divine feminine. And rather than saying amazing grace, we can say amazing spiritual space, because grace is the female that comes through the symbol as well as the psychology of how we must awaken the divine feminine to be more loving, more compassionate, and more serving of the human creation into which we have been incarnated, which is really for each of us through the mother's womb or the feminine vehicle.
Well, I also have to say that we do have this video called Voice of Africa, which we edited with Credo Mutua. And I made sure what section was left in there, and it said, you know, he thinks that the United Nations should be run by women. Mm-hmm. He said there'd be a lot of screaming, a lot of yelling, but we'd have a peaceful world. And I think that that's just a great idea of how, we'll say, you know, that's somewhat indigenous logic, that, you know, we really understand that we're trying to really bring about a greater level of peace and understanding. And that's what the feminine is all about as well.
Right. I think the problems that happen with this, what we call maybe women's liberation, which is sort of an old term now, but that women wanted to become like men. They wanted that power. They wanted that corporate control,
identity.
Yeah. And there was a loss of the true feminine qualities. I think what's happening now is that women are maintaining their sense of feminine, like you, Desiree.
You
keep that balance with JJ, and there's a right balance, and yet you sort of like run a lot of this organization, but you're doing it in a different way. But I'm just using you as an example, because I think there's a new way to be that I think women don't know, really. So what would you say to women?
Well, I just want to go back and bring it back a little bit more to some of the ancient concepts as well, which is like Kuan Yin. You mentioned her a couple times. Mm-hmm. And the idea of the balance between the male and female, actually, supposedly, she was originally Avalokiteshvara, who then wanted to help humanity and is coming down, realizing the amount of suffering. Even, you know, some people think that there's no negativity here or no suffering, or we create the suffering. But regardless of your particular beliefs, she saw the massive amount of suffering on this level. And she ended up having these 1,000 arms with the eyes in them to be able to share and help humanity. And that loving nature of trying to really reach out, I think you see that in the Virgin manifestations. It's amazing, the Virgin manifestations, actually, if we take a moment to
The Marian apparitions, lords and the...
They were in Cairo, they were in Bosnia, Herzegovina.
Yeah, they're still in Bosnia.
All these areas, sometimes right before
these sacred sites.
Yeah, Medjugorje.
Medjugorje. We saw the energy in Cairo, Egypt, back in 67.
So what are you saying? That's an infusion of divine feminine onto the planet itself.
To try to help humanity out of love.
Form.
Out of love, yeah.
What we call the lesser Sophia, that which is manifested into what the human eye can recognize as the vehicle.
So how do we return to the greater Sophia, the greater divine wisdom? What's the process of that return, ascension, the rebirth?
Well, in our new book, we equate the work of the divine feminine with the work of the Holy Spirit. It is the coming of gifts, of sharing co-creativity, of recognizing that we are universal humans, waking up to the holistic vision that the hidden or the repressed female side, the creative side, has to be expressed lovingly, not as a masculine symbol, but it has to be expressed in balance. To that end, the inner awareness of rebirthing, the inner awareness of reconciliation with all forms of humanity and the greater gift of compassion between the two natures, the divine and the human, are brought together into this greater partnership. We recognize the divine process that we are part of through the gifts of divine spirit that ultimately prepares us for work with the other worlds of the cosmic creation.
Right. So let me say a few of those gifts. These are even just traditional gifts that you even find in the Bible. And most people have ignored this and not understood of what it means when this power of the divine feminine, we'll say of the Shekinah or the Ruach HaKodesh, the Holy Spirit, comes back. Gifts of healing. And how many people out there in your audience, and I'm sure ours, are already using in a certain sense the gifts of healing? That's one main thing.
Well, there's a lot of return to the gifts of healing. You're saying that's the archetype.
Feminine.
Well, it makes sense. Because
that's the energy that's flowing through us to try to help and heal the planet. Mm-hmm. So also there's other aspects like the spreading of wisdom is actually considered one aspect. And even the scroll of Daniel says that wisdom will become abundant. Here we are, wisdom. We just said that. Sophia is wisdom.
Well, the soul itself, you know, in the late 1900s, the artists was supposed to be inspired by the soul, and they would always refer to the soul of creativity as she. She, the feminine, would speak through the artist's manifestation of their creativity.
Exactly.
So, and then we got away from that. And I think as we return to this aspect of ourselves, we each of us become more integrated, but then we also become more integrated in relationships as well.
Yeah, and I want to say one of the other gifts is the discernment of spirits. And this is interesting because women are very intuitive usually, especially if they get in touch with their nature or higher nature. And they can sense when someone's lying to them. They can sense, you know, we'll say manipulations. This is all stuff that's innate. And we can all share it. And let me just say from the feminine that we all have these gifts. It's not a feminine power.
It's a feminine quality.
That we can all share it in.
But the thing about feminine qualities, and this is a question, does it come more natural to women?
I think it does, yes.
I think it does, too, because we're also programmed and conditioned a way, if you're a masculine, you're to be programmed away from those feminine qualities. So we're ignoring those aspects of ourselves.
And actually, we just have a new video on the YouTube from Dr. Stephen Sinatra and Dr. Jack and I talking to him. And he says he acknowledges that women are very intuitive and that they actually can hurt their own health when they deny their intuitive nature.
I don't think it's just women, but more women because they're more intuitive.
Yeah, and this is what he found as a doctor. Even he's saying also for men, you know, if you lie and you cheat, you're actually hurting your own inner nature and you're actually ultimately hurting your health.
And my theory of that is because there's something integrous about each of us that knows what truth is, that knows what purity is, knows what compassion is. And if we deny our own nature, that nature then gets distorted. So we have to be true to the nature of integrity the best we can. Will evolve to this higher realm. But we're not taught that. We have to, in a sense, discover that on our own.
Exactly. And this is why it's so important to find in the artifacts that we've studied with in ancient Egypt, in the Middle East, even in Turkey, this symbolism of the divine feminine that is there from the very beginning is going back not simply 3,000, 4,000 years, but 10, even 12,000 years. That some of the earliest figurines we find in Germany are the symbol of the Earth Mother in the wooden artifact that goes back approximately maybe close to 2,000 years.
Thousands of years.
Perhaps the earliest ones that we found from another archive goes back maybe 7,000, 8,000 years.
Well, let's take that aspect of your work, this other side of your work, and talk about the differences. So, you know, there's the divine feminine that brings the wisdom and brings the nurturing. But you're also saying in your work, especially with the 72 names, that there's different qualities and different cultures to the feminine aspect. So Tara is not interchangeable with Isis or Buffalo Calf Woman or the Virgin Mary or whatever form of the feminine you want to you know, talk about, they're actually something different.
And there are linguistic powers connected with each of these names because they represent different degrees of assimilation of wisdom or higher aspects of knowledge, which then are put into action.
But I don't understand how, if there's this archetypal feminine and masculine, how they end up being different in each culture.
Right. Well, I just want to say, as Dr. Tech was mentioning about archaeology, those are things that we personally have seen. But if you go back in even ancient history, and this has been confirmed, I'm not talking about something that's just off the wall, that there's these like large, or I should say these figures of this fat woman with big breasts. Oh, yeah. And it's called the Willendorf Venus, and it was discovered in Austria 26,000 years ago. So
someone just compared that to Kim Kardashian. There was an article about that.
Well, there is actually a couple ancient artifacts that look very similar to that about the same time.
Yeah,
so this is these at the very beginning. And, of course, we've worked with the Zulus, our Voice of Africa, and they had the actual considered a mother culture. That it wasn't a masculine culture, but the mothering culture. And they looked for the mother god prior to even the father god. So there's these matriarchal societies in ancient
times. Well, of course, because we're born out of the mother, out of the womb, which is the feminine. But talk about, I mean, that's great, and I get that. But talk about the differences, that aspect of your work. Because I think it's important to realize that, you know, there's different frequencies and different cultures that bring out different aspects of the feminine nature.
Well, you know, we do have this book on the 72 divine names of the Godhead, and what's interesting, it's a similar situation to the Divine Mother, because she is quite different in all the different aspects.
Talk about that.
But it's the elements. The water element is brought up in from some cultures more than others. The wisdom element, as we've been talking about, is there. The alleviation of suffering, the motherly love, is present. So all these different aspects. I mean, there's even. I mean, there's numerous different aspects of that. But those are, I think, are the most important. That motherly love is present, but also the wisdom is present. And those are the two aspects that I think we really have to see as part of the divine feminine nature.
Well, the Sophia aspect, though, would bring out the wisdom.
Right.
But I'm saying, I thought maybe that's what you were saying, that there seems to be a difference in the feminine structure of these different archetypal forms.
Right, and there's even Gaia, which you have to acknowledge Mother Earth, so all the renewal energy that we have here on this planet, and then linking that to the Shekinah, which many people say is masculine, but actually it's a feminine aspect. It's
but
a feminine
Alan, your word. Question is very good because it begs the question, are we only working with these titles as titles? In other words, are we only working with surface structure of language rather than transformational structure? And this is where the narrative must be, should we say, put into action and into results. There has to be a sociology. There has to be a follow-through in terms of spiritual refreshment and enlightenment. And even though we find these great metaphors and titles in many of the Western traditions, unlike in the Far East and Eastern Africa, most of the aspects of what the Divine Feminine was all about was considered only as a title or a picture that was in the abstract rather than in the real world.
And so this is why it's so important at this time, especially to understand the feminine aspect within all of us that's being reawakened, that nature of life. And there's a great video out, I think it was done by some younger people, saying how, you know, we're living in entropy, that everything is destroying itself. But what is the uniqueness of who we are? And that is life. That is centropy that puts all the pieces back together.
Right.
And that is really the power of the Divine Mother that grows into a spiritual renewal in all aspects of life, in love and sharing, in giving birth. All these aspects are all part of the centropy of life that goes against the entropy of the destruction.
Yeah, I believe in centropy more than entropy. I mean, life builds towards complexity. It's only machines. If you look at the clockwork universe, it's the machines that you wind up and wind down. But there's something about life that is opposed to entropy, and that is the renewal force of this divine feminine. But what you're saying, yes, of course it's in all of us, but do you think in our evolution that we come to be that? Let's say, you know, looking at, you know, you're
a woman? And will you, as your personality ego drops away, do you come to embody that in totality, you feel?
Well, I'd like to think I would ultimately embody both the male and female. And this is something from the Coptic teachings. They actually said they make the male female and the female male. Because it's important, we feel, to have that balance.
That's what the Chinese say. The yin becomes the yang and the yang becomes the yin.
Yeah, and I would even go beyond that and say the two merges one. So you have aspects both of the feminine and of the masculine, not one versus the other.
So a time which could be called an age of convergence. It's a coming together of Eastern and Western intellectual history, science, cultural attunement, but also rediscovery in the rebirthing of civilization. And as we take this back and look at the earliest evidence in this process of conveyance, what is called birth, incarnation, ascension, there is the core of all of these teachings, whether it's anthropology or theology, is the spark of the divine feminine that we must understand within ourselves as we go into a higher process of cosmic awareness and ultimately contact with other worlds of what the Keys of Enoch call the ultra-terrestrial beings, beings that have the ability to bring us through the womb of space and time into a new identity, that of Homo Universalis, universal humanity.
In that universal humanity, do we still keep our polarities, our dualities of male-female? Because I think there's something important in having the different aspects of the energy, that that polarity builds on a manifesting awareness.
In the context of the Keys of Enoch and also in the context of the Book of Revelation, John the Divine, the polarity is transformed into a different energy field, what is called the bride or the garment of the bride by John the Divine, and the Keys of Enoch, the Christ and Overself, where we see the intermarriage between the human and the divine within us. And in that sense, we qualify ourselves to go into a contact with other worlds, Homo Galacticus, as you refer to, galactic humanity, where we've overcome these divisions and these dualisms that have hurt humanity and have basically allowed the female element of the human race to be in a secondary status for millennia. And part of the UN's development goals is to raise the consciousness of the female, to allow the female element of the human race to come into a genuine leadership, a genuine role in the teaching magisterium, where we are able to reach out with the full gifts, the full powers of equal balance, equal opportunity, and within the wisdom of the divine, being both divine mother, divine father, and divine child, the triple power within each of us.
What does the child represent? I mean, is the child the rebirth? I mean, and that's is that consistent throughout cultures as well?
In many ways, many of our leading psychologists believe that the child represents that part which has to be assimilated, the part that has received, shall we say, only partial love prior to going into full self-realization. And
it was the purity. It's the purity.
It represents the purity also of being in contact with the paraphysical gifts that are usually forgotten after the age of 7 or 8, where the rational mind overcomes the inner paraphysical or the spiritual mind.
What are the paraphysical gifts you're talking about?
Well, the paraphysical gifts would be distant healing, remote viewing, remote communication,
right,
omnidirectionality of all levels of creativity, and Desiree has also mentioned a few of these, but basically it's the coming together of what we will call a higher state of consciousness, capital C, that allows us to go beyond the traditional boundaries of science and theology that have conscribed us, circumscribed us to Mother Earth. without recognizing she is a mother.
Right. And if we want to take that one step further, because we haven't mentioned too much about the Sanskrit, of course, they have many, many names of the Divine Mother.
Yeah.
One, Adi Shakti. And, of course, we have a recent CD called, and by the way, our website is keysofenoch.org, called I Love With Greatness, that has many of these names on there with our great singer, Jocelyn Smith, and Dr. Hertak was singing on it. And some of the lyrics did come mostly from us, from our new book. So, but Adi Shakti, for example, is really that divine eternal power. So the entire concept of the Sanskrit is the entire universe was pretty much coming out of the blossoming forth of this divine mother element. Mm-hmm. So even every aspect, we're thinking about our birth, or we're thinking about the planet birth, but they're really talking about the fact that the whole structure and the beginnings of life came from the divine mother. And even the various mantras, like the Gayatri mantra has the 24 letters mm-hmm. after the very initial words. I mean, there's a mathematics mm-hmm. that she was part of. And this is part of the Shekinah energy also for the Hebrews, that there's a mathematics, a gematria, behind what she represents.
But haven't you also integrated that into the hardcore science, the birth of the universe?
You know, there's a recent movie out, I think it's called, what, the number, I think it's 23 or 28. Mm-hmm. It's by, I'll get it. Well, it's the whole idea that these numbers keep coming up. I mean, you say it's science, and people think it's abstract or happenstance, but there's a mathematical order to the universe.
Right, and it has to be. Yeah. Well, sacred geometry proves that these patterns repeat in numbers and cycles. So, and that's also an aspect of the feminine.
Exactly,
these
that's
patterns
exactly
of
what
perception,
I'm saying.
Patterns of ordering.
I mean,
so what we're saying is not these very unique words that come from the Sanskrit tradition or the Tibetan tradition or the Hebrew Aramaic tradition is being important. We're saying that we must put these concepts behind the words mm-hmm. into action by seeing the ecumenical body of humanity is one in unity. We must put the spirit of compassion into action by seeing that we've gone through thousands of years of inner battles and struggles and wars within the human heart, and now has come the time for healing, for reconciliation. And finally, we must see that on the cosmic order, as personified by the disciples of Jesus, both male and female, that were there to receive a higher teaching of ascension science or knowledge in the Pistis Sophia, that we are being prepared cosmically to enter into a whole new spectrum of intelligence. And we must recognize that some of the great master teachers from the other worlds, or the angelic forms, if you use the traditional religious symbols, would be both male or female, or the combination of both.
So, if I can come back a little bit to the book that Dr. Hertak wrote in the 70s called The Keys of Enoch, there's a whole idea of the Father universe, the Son universe, and then the Shekinah universe. And it's that Shekinah universe, that's the, we'll say, the inner patternings, or what David Bone calls like the implicate order. Yeah. And, you know, going back, it was a movie by Jim Carrey, is it? Number 23, how this number keeps coming up. And I think all of us, we've often recognized.
Is that a new movie? That's an old movie.
Yes, an older. It's 2007.
Yeah, yeah.
But actually, that the numbers keep coming up in our lives all the time, whether it's from our birth dates or from our addresses or
and
from our
cars. And what
does
that mean, these recurring numbers?
Well, I consider it part of this matrix, but what it is really is the implicate order.
Oh, revealing, like the synchronicity is revealing itself.
Yeah, and we work and we operate in that structure, and that's the Shekinah universe, this mathematical gematria that's behind everything, and that's what flows in our life, in a sense.
You see, there's also the tree of life, the three letters, the mem and the sheen. But it's important, and this is a very important metaphor for our friends who come from more of the Orthodox or traditional community of faith, that they must understand that there is the She within the Shekinah, or the Shekinah. The divine spirit is there in spirit and divine presence. And it must not be overlooked, because if humanity is to overcome this horrendous specter of global annihilation, a global religious war by fanatics of one extreme or the other, it has to come to the heart of the divine that is feminine within each of us. Ultimately, it has to come through the intersection of the Divine Mother in the Christian text and in the Pistis Sophia text, as well as in the Keys of Enoch, the Divine Mother, is that part which reconciles the children of Abraham.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's there. I mean, the Jewish religion, Friday night, the women lights the candles and calls in the Shekinah energy of peace and abundance.
Bride.
Yes. And in the Christian tradition, obviously, there's all these churches to Mary, the compassionate one. So that's been overridden.
Even in the Islamic, we find, of course, in the Quran, the name of Mary is mentioned more times than Muhammad. And it's interesting, when we were in Egypt back years ago, we were talking to scholars that were aware that in 1967, over the Church of Baitung in Cairo, Divine Mother appeared.
Even
the present Nasser of Islamic tradition recognized this in the public news reports, that there was a sense of joy, there was a sense of mystery, but there was a sense that the Divine Mother was there to tell all of us that we had to go back to the beginning of the divine word, the divine program, and recognize that there were also female prophets, there were also female disciples, there were also female sages that cry out to us now to overcome our theological distances that are largely male-orientated in terms of traditional logic, to see something that is holistic.
No, I think there really is something to these apparitions of Mary. You know, in the Bronx, there was an apparition of Mary in 1947. There's a story about the boy who saw the Virgin for 12 nights. She appeared to this young boy. And there's a sanctuary there on the Grand Concourse in the Northern Bronx.
I know it happened all over the world, but I think one of the amazing things is the Virgin of Guadalupe, which really helped the indigenous people of Mexico be able to come to terms
with
the Spanish.
She really wasn't the Virgin Mary. She was really an Indian goddess that appeared, is what I
heard. Well, it was basically on a cloth, which was supposed to disintegrate the texture of the cloth, the type of cloth it was, in 50 to 100 years, and it's still around now.
Have you seen the cloth?
Yes, I have. And it's very, very powerful. Very, very powerful. We've also seen the cloth of Turin.
I know.
Yeah, very powerful.
I saw it was in the Church of the Turin cloth. That was just amazing, being there. There's some energy there. But anyway, getting back to your book as we wrap up here, the 72 names of the Divine Mother, how is that structured? How are you laying out that book?
This is still a little bit up for grabs, but I think what we're going to do is bring them together. So all the names connected, we'll say the Middle East, the Near East will be together. Those from the Far East and India will be together. And then those from the shamanistic cultures will be together. So it gives people a little bit of a semblance of order. But and we're not going back into too much of the ancient cultures that aren't present today. But we are mentioning, of course, the Egyptian.
What about Inanna? Easter.
Of course, that was the first plate in the Keys of Enoch, is that of the Scroll of Esther.
Hadassah, yeah.
But why don't you talk from a linguistic point of view, Dr. Hertog, about the qualities of these sounds. So when we say these names, or you can...
One of the things that I think is mentioned in there, or at least I did some research on it, is the fact that the mem is all over the world.
And mother.
There's been studies on this. Now, some people say if you really work with a child, you know, learning to speak, the first sound is the mama or something like that. Yeah,
Ama,
Mata, all these same.
Ima.
It's all over the world.
Mama.
Yeah.
What is that?
And Papa would be the next sound. So they're making an excuse in a certain sense, saying, well, this is the easiest word, so it was used all over the world for mother, and it's therefore used, you know, in all the divine names as well. But in a sense, you know, why is it? Why is it really so easy to say for a kid? It couldn't be something like Kaka or something, you know?
I mean, that's an interesting observation.
All over the world.
So maybe there's something or innate in the human being that resonates those sounds with those archetypal energies.
Yeah.
So for a moment, let's take time to concentrate on the Divine Mother.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the ancient names. And then we'll visualize, for example, the Mother of the Fathers. And here I'm speaking not only of the Old Testament fathers, but the New Testament fathers. Imma ha'avot. Imma ha'avoth.
Imma ha'avoth.
Imma ha'avoth. And then we think of the mother of the prophets, the great thinkers, the prophets for the children of Abraham. Imma ha'divim.
Ima ha nevi'im. Ima ha nevi'im. Ima ha nevi'im. And then we think of the mother of the apostles, of the great messengers. Ima hashlikim. Ima hashlikim. Ima hashlikim. Ima hashlikim. Ima hashlikim. So as you take these modalities as a inner liturgy, a liturgy of affirmations, you begin to see that the energy flows from the seed syllables through all of the seven chakras, or what the New Testament writers think of the seven seals, the energy thresholds in our human body, our mental body, and our spiritual body, to which we invoke the realization of co-creation, co-genesis, co-evolution. And this is where we come into the idea of Melikat Lachim, the Divine Mother, who is the refuge of those who have limitations. She who is also the comforter of afflictions. She is also the mother Ha Malikim of the messengers or the angels. All of these build an intensity, in vibration, in visualization.
And if we want to move into some of the Sanskrit, because I think we have to acknowledge both East and West, we have Mata, which is the name for mother, but also then Sarasvati, which represents the knowledge and the flow of water. And she represented the knowledge behind music, speech, learning, and science. So this is understood not only in the West, as we talked about with Sophia, but also in the concept of Sarasvati in the Far East, in the area of India in this case. So Mata Sarasvati.
Mata Sarasvati.
Mata Sarasvati. Mata Sarasvati. And one could even just say Mata Mata. Maybe we'll say that together.
Mata Mata.
Mata Mata. Mata Mata. Mata Mata.
Wait, but you,
Mata Mata, but are you saying, thank you, by intoning, by saying these syllables, we're actually calling on a certain frequency? I mean, as a linguist, can you explain what's happening as we, well, these are ancient languages, so
we all know the great
yes
advancements that have been made through neurolinguistic programming. This is a type of musical linguistic programming, where we begin to open up our mind into sacred space. We begin to embody these vibrations with intention, with wisdom. It's not simply saying the vocables or the morphemes and phonemes,
yeah,
like a child babbling. It's the recognition that there's a sense of dedication, prayer, humility, and purity of heart that we invoke. And so these are all part of a precious liturgy, a precious teaching that is set forth in this new book, The 72 Divine Names.
And I'd also like to include South America, because that's something that many people are familiar with this name, but of course we haven't discussed it tonight. Pachamama, which is another. This is really the mother of not only the planet, but when they really had the whole concept, it was the mother of the cosmos.
Is that Spanish, Pachamama?
No, it's actually Amara or Quechua.
Quechua.
Oh, yeah. So, of course, it's Spanish.
But what I'm getting at, by saying these sounds, we are invoking a frequency in us. Is that what we're doing with these mantric?
We believe
but we're
so.
Also attaching this to a language of light, capital L, the light of recognizing that there's a higher empowerment that comes with these names if we have the right wisdom and the right intention.
I see. So as we say the names and we kind of tune in to the sounds of these,
we go into a transformational or revelatory linguistics. Mm-hmm. We begin to understand why the great apostle tells us in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, there is a language of wisdom. There is a language of knowledge, and he delineates this. And this is part of the gifts of the Holy Spirit. This is very important.
So that's what we've lost also with our modern
languages.
We've
lost the wisdom tradition is philosophy, psychology, and sociology that has to be re-embodied with us as universal humans.
And the resonance of frequency with these. So if we're saying an ancient word for mother or the divine feminine, we're actually aligning back to the ancient wisdom of those beings, entities, what right. or archetypes.
I say it's like a cosmic telephone number. We're tuning into those frequencies, and those frequencies are tuning into us.
We're doing it from a higher rather than a lower situation. Lower would be a type of ridiculous comparative religionism, the type that Rabbi Akiva accused the minim, or the what we call it, the blasphemers, who simply mix things with the lower gods. Now, we are saying going to the higher source of divine spirit or Holy Spirit, the Ruach. We will see in the authentic scriptures of the Tanakh, the Imma, the divine mother that is there. We will see in Proverbs chapter 8, she who is co-creator with the Father. We will see in the Psalms and in the visions of David, as well as in Isaiah, the coming of the divine feminine with the Holy Spirit as a rebirthing process that we are part of. And thus we separate ourselves from the lower totemisms or psychologies or nationalisms that pervert these images only into self-serving totemisms, overlooking the ecumenical sense of divine purpose and service.
So as a linguist, we're going to wrap up here, but as a linguist, can you talk about the origins, because you've studied ancient languages, you've had an amazing awakening of higher consciousness by intoning. You talk about this in your book, The Keys of Enoch, where you vibrated a sort of frequency of language. You were experimenting in 1973, and suddenly a doorway to a portal to a higher dimension opened up to you because you were able to tap into the frequencies of a language. So talk about the relationship between these ancient languages and evolving consciousness.
Well, we are told, for example, in the Old Testament Book of Wisdom, that is in some versions of the Bible, I quote, chapter 6, verse 24, "Now what wisdom is and what was her origin, I will declare, and I will not hide from you the mysteries of God, but will seek her, or Sophia, out from the beginning of her birth, and bring the knowledge of her to light, and will not pass over the truth." Uh-huh. Hebrew word emet. Or we
where is that from? Where are you reading?
The Wisdom of Solomon, or the Book of Wisdom, as it is known in some versions of the Bible.
That's the
Catholic Bible, of course. Uh-huh. But we are referring in the wisdom tradition of the greater Sophia that we are now experiencing as a humanity going through this consciousness shift or consciousness rebirth. We are finding our origins, and the origins is the Godhead also is a she. Mm-hmm. The Shekinah or Shekinah is also a she. The divine mothering of the three principal letters, the Aleph, the Shin, the Mem, and the Tree of Life, is also the she within each of us that we must find and use. And then I quote from our new book, "May we be aware of the union of the two forces within us, the divine male and the divine female, as we work as planetary pilgrims on this microcosmic sphere called Mother Earth. May we be prepared for ascension," which means full ascension cannot take place until the male and female elements are balanced within ourselves and within global humanity.
What does ascension mean to you?
Ascension is the process of realizing that evolution doesn't stop with Mother Earth, but continues in the cosmic creation.
Well, in a sense, you are talking about the coming of the divine marriage, of this hierogamos.
What John the Divine speaks of is the marriage, the changing of garments, where we as the bride experience the cosmic Christ.
But it's also the alchemy of creation.
It's the biological and psychological alchemy that ultimately finds the higher face of the divine. We illustrate this in our book called The Overself Awakening. But again, to answer your question, I'm asking our audience throughout the world to go to our webpage, keysofenoch.org, scroll down with music, and acquire this wonderful instruction in musical form, our CD entitled Sacred Name, Sacred Codes.
And also, I Love with Greatness.
I Love with Greatness. Yeah. This will bring you into the full power of these sounds as tones, as sacred geometries, as sacred color patterns that we must also assimilate in this process of recognizing that the divine language gives birth, i.e., is the feminine tool that the divine gave us. As he gave us language, he gave us also the process of divine assimilation.
And don't forget, we feel we're in the age of the Holy Spirit. So all these aspects really are available to everybody for healing, for wisdom, for understanding, being able to discern the spirits, to know what's going on the planet, to know where you need to be at the right place at the right time.
Well, because the West has masculinized the world with materiality.
And also the intellect, right, and also
this surface level, the coming of the feminine, of intuition, of spirituality, is the divine marriage that will unite in each one of us and lift our consciousness towards the ascended state. And that's
what I want to say, that the intellect is not negative, but it really needs to be balanced with that higher.
No, we've gone too far in one direction, and now there's a return to spirituality or the intuition, which is the kind of polarity of that intellect.
So we invite everyone into the age of the divine spirit and into the new beginning.
This is the time of the joyous mother. As the Hebrew prophet said, this is the time of Imat Simkat, the joyous mother. Mm. She's within us. Mm. We are in oneness. We are in unity, and we are in the process of a great consciousness change throughout the world, which we believe will understand through its higher unity, the sacred marriage.
JJ's face is glowing when he says that. He's pulling in that energy, and he is smiling. Thank you, Dr. JJ Hertog and Desiree Hertog. Thank Dr. Desiree Hertog. Both of you great mystics and scholars. Any final words here?
No, it's always a pleasure to be with you and, of course, on New Realities.
But no, tell me where people, when the book is coming out and...
Well, we expect it to be out by the end of January, beginning of February, maybe that early. And we're also going to be doing our Easter program.
Oh, yeah.
In Phoenix. On this topic. And we're going to be looking at different cultures around the world and the Divine Mother.
Oh, nice. So the Phoenix, Easter, the Phoenix resurrection is all happening with you, and people can go to those conferences. They're open
exactly
to the public.
See you at keysofenoch.org.
And any final words, Dr.?
Yes, always have a smile on your heart.
Oh.
It's the sacred heart of the divine that makes life joyous.
Well, thank you both. I'm going to have to listen to this program again. There was a lot of information coming in, a lot of energy and frequencies. No, I was feeling it. And, you know, deep concepts of the unification of the self, the culture, the planet, and, of course, the cosmos, which is happening on all levels as we move into what you call ultra-terrestrial beings. We are already that, but we're uniting with something big.
It's important we don't see it as just stopping with Mother Earth, that this
right
is the spirit that goes out throughout the entire universe, the multiverses.
Right, because creation, whatever you want to call it, is not just localized here. It's a non-local phenomenon happening on all levels. So we'll do more. We're also coming out with a whole DVD series that I've done with the Hertogs over the last 20 years. You can look for that on New Realities, newrealities.com, also on futurescience.org. This is Alan Steinfeld with New Realities. Thank you for listening. If you have any comments or questions about tonight's show, why don't you email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. I'll pass that on to the Hertogs, who are working 24 hours a day, bringing an uplifting consciousness to the planet. They are some of the hardest working people I've met. They do not take a vacation. You're just amazing here. You're so dedicated to the awakening of the planet that it's just fun to hang out with you and get that. So thanks again. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, go to my website, newrealities.com, and email me, like I said, at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thanks for watching. Good night.